of our time. What good is resistance that brings only destruction? In stark contrast stood the Pharisees, whose influence extended throughout the villages and towns of Judea. While less politically powerful than the Sadducees, they commanded greater respect among ordinary people. The Pharisees embraced both written and oral Torah, teaching in synagogues rather than focusing exclusively on temple worship. God's law must be lived in every aspect of daily life, taught Rabbi Hillel, one of the most respected Pharisaic teachers of the period. It is not enough to perform the temple rituals. One must embody the commandments in the marketplace, at the dinner table, in how we treat the stranger and the vulnerable. Meanwhile, on the fringes of society, more radical responses to Roman rule took shape. The Essenes had withdrawn to communal settlements like Qumran near the Dead Sea, creating an alternative society based on ritual purity and intense scriptural study. They awaited divine intervention that would overthrow the corrupt temple leadership and the Roman occupiers alike. The most volatile elements, however, were the various revolutionary movements collectively known as Zealots. Operating from hideouts in the Galilean hills and the Judean wilderness, these groups launched sporadic attacks against Roman patrols and those Jews they deemed collaborators. "Better to die with a sword in hand than live on our knees," was their rallying cry, passed in whispers between sympathizers. It was into this cauldron of competing ideologies, economic hardship, and political oppression that Yeshua of Nazareth would eventually emerge. The stage was being set for a figure whose teachings would challenge both the accommodationist stance of the religious establishment and the violent resistance of the revolutionaries. In the highlands of Galilee, far from Jerusalem's political center, ordinary families like those of Yeshua's ancestors struggled with more immediate concerns. Whether the harvest would be sufficient, if the tax collectors would leave enough to survive the winter, and how to preserve their sacred identity in a world increasingly hostile to it. As evening fell over Judea, lamps were lit in humble dwellings. In synagogues across the land, community elders recited ancient prophecies of deliverance and restoration. Despite Roman dominance, the hope for a Messiah, a divinely appointed leader who would restore justice and Jewish sovereignty, burned brightly in the hearts of many. What form this deliverance might take, however, remained a matter of fierce debate that would shape the response to Yeshua's ministry in the decades to come. Chapter 2: Grandparents and Family Lineage. The small village of Nazareth clung to the limestone hills of Lower Galilee, its mud-brick homes blending into the rocky landscape. Unlike the cosmopolitan cities of Sepphoris or Tiberias, Nazareth remained a humble settlement of perhaps no more than 400 souls, primarily craftsmen, farmers, and those who served their basic needs. It was here, amidst these modest surroundings, that the family lineage of Yeshua took root. In the generations preceding Yeshua's birth, the hills surrounding Nazareth would have echoed with the sounds of hammers striking stone and the rasping of saws through timber. Among these laboring hands were likely those of Yeshua's paternal grandfather, a man whose name has been lost to history but whose legacy would be passed down through skilled hands. "Jacob, son of Mathan," an elderly craftsman might have called out across the workshop yard, using the name tradition suggests for Yeshua's paternal grandfather. "The beams for the synagogue roof must be prepared before the rains come." The paternal line of Yeshua's family, like many in rural Galilee, likely maintained itself through artisanal crafts supplemented by small-scale farming. Archaeological evidence from first-century Galilean villages reveals households that combined multiple economic strategies to survive. A family workshop might produce agricultural implements, furniture, or structural elements for building projects, while also tending olive groves or small plots of land during growing seasons. These were not the elite artisans who served Herodian palaces or Roman administrators, but rather practical craftsmen who met the daily needs of their communities.